Good evening, darklings and feigned fiends. Welcome to episode 3 of Vampires Ruined My Life. Tonight, Tori and I are reviewing the Immortal Goosebumps classic, Vampire Breath. Though vampire literature is typically thought to be for readers of a more mature age, there has always been a need for baby bats to find their way, and spooky children's literature provided such an outlet. The publication date was November 1996. The series was Goosebumps by R.L. Stine. This book specifically does not have an age range, but Goosebumps overall has a range from ages 7 to 12.
Yeah.
This book is 114 pages, so it's an easy read. And the premise is straight from the book's copy itself. Tough. That's Freddy Martinez and his friend Kara. They're not afraid of anything. But that was before they went exploring in Freddy's basement. Before they found the secret room. Before they found the bottle of vampire breath. Poor Freddy and Kara. They should have never opened the bottle of vampire breath. Because now there's a vampire in Freddy's basement. And he's very, very thirsty.
Ooh, that sounds creepy.
That does sound creepy. So we're going to break down Freddy and Kara. There are two protagonists. Freddy Martinez is well on his way to fuckboy status. That's for damn sure. Like, he gets props for having a female-identifying best friend, but they communicate through physical violence. He's also got some weird toxic masculinity with the whole toughness front. It's like, you're 12, man. I get it. Puberty's hitting you like a train. But calm down.
Mm-hmm. Seriously. And Kara Simonetti is someone described as tough, but also physically capable, often punching Freddy in the stomach until he, quote, sees stars, which is a really problematic way that 1990s girls were often written to make them seem marketable to male readers, and also just to make them seem like, I'm a tough girl, I'm not like other girls kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Yet Kara's still kind of a wet blanket in that traditional, quote unquote, girl role. First by warning Freddy to ease up on Tyler, the kid they're babysitting, and then by being the one to second guess their descent into the tunnel in the basement. But I guess she evens out her role because she is the one who goes to open the vampire breath when common sense and legit fear is finally getting the better of Freddy. So the story begins, and Freddy Martinez and Kara Simonetti are babysitting Tyler Brown, a 6-year-old boy. And Freddy enjoys tormenting Tyler with stories of werewolves, so he's telling him the scary werewolf story. And then Freddy hears someone coming through the front door, so he convinces Tyler that a werewolf is entering the house. But the werewolf is actually just Tyler's parents. So Freddy and Kara get paid for babysitting, and then they head back to Freddy's house. His parents aren't home, so Freddy and Kara play air hockey in the basement, which... pretty sweet setup to be a kid with an air hockey machine in your basement. Mm-hmm. But then they start fighting because they're kind of like siblings in that way. Like, they're friends, but they act a lot like siblings and they do a lot of like physical fighting. And the fight results in Freddy body slamming into a wooden cabinet. And the cabinet falls over, revealing a previously hidden door in the basement wall.
So the kids open the door and they find a stone-walled tunnel. Typical suburban Ohio home, right?
Mm-hmm.
The kids find a flashlight in the basement, so they decide to explore the tunnel. The two friends find another door, and Freddy opens it. Freddy and Kara are shocked to find a coffin.
Whoa.
In order to prove their bravery, the kids open the coffin. Inside the coffin, they find a strange bottle labeled Vampire Breath.
But not a real body, which is probably good.
Yeah.
So, Chell, were you the type of 12-year-old who would have A, told scary stories to 6-year-olds, B, roughhoused to the point of knocking over furniture, C, explored a spooky secret doorway and underground tunnel and gone through a second door into a room with a coffin as the only thing in it, D, opened a coffin in said room of said tunnel in said secret passageway, or E, opened a little glass bottle labeled Vampire Breath?
I can say with the utmost confidence that yes is my answer to all of these, because I was vampire obsessed, spoopy weirdo who put on a tough front. I was also a budding paranormal investigator by then, so I would have been absolutely hoping for something this outrageously supernatural. What about you, Tori?
Yeah, no, absolutely all of the above. I also, when I was 12, I was really into the X-Files, and so I had started this like paranormal investigative agency in my neighborhood, which was mostly just me and my friends. And we did like a yearly UFO camp out, and we'd camp out in the meadow behind my house and like look for UFOs and stuff. But I was always hoping for... I know, right? It was fun.
Oh my God, how wholesome.
It was so fun. And we did it every year. And it was like at the end of school year. So it became like the end of your camp out thing that we would do.
Yeah.
And we would like burn our homework because the year was over and we were trying to expel the evil.
Wow.
And my friend really liked Spam. So he would bring Spam over. My mom would make like burgers and hot dogs and she would cook up his Spam. And then we would like roast marshmallows. And then we would go sleep in tents in the meadow.
That's so cool.
It was really fun. But unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to find like a secret cave under my house or a vampire coffin or anything like that. But I would have been into it. So
I had a park and a creek and woods behind my house. And the woods and my town had a lot of like creepy things about it, including like a real true murder mystery that had happened about a decade before we moved there. So my town back east was definitely full of like the heebie-jeebies, you know.
Yeah.
And my little paranormal investigations were often like also kind of part Goonies. Like we were also looking for buried treasure and stuff.
Oh, cool.
So I would ditch mass at church. Because after Sunday school, you're supposed to just go to mass, you know, with the adults. But I would grab some of my friends and we would hide out in some of like the school rooms.
Okay.
Until like the coast was clear. And then we would go like exploring like the mostly empty buildings that my church was attached to by like these underground tunnels. So.
Oh, that's so fun. That would be really fun. I would have been all over that too.
I was like, church is great.
Yeah, I didn't go to church. I hunt for ghosts. So
yeah, no, by the time I was 12, I was not going to church anymore. But yeah, this was a little bit younger. But
that's very fun though. I would love to go. See, if church were all about hunting for ghosts in like the church basement, I would have been all about it. I would have been begging my mom to take me to church. I've been like, yes, please. So the kids fuck around with the bottle because it's a bottle in a random coffin in a room in a basement, I guess. I don't know. And of course it comes open. And a putrid green mist comes out of it, and suddenly the coffin is no longer empty. There's a vampire there, and he has the very traditional Western European Dracula type look. He has kind of like a bald head and old-fashioned clothes, complete with a long cape. And he introduces himself as Count Nightwing, and he is really thirsty. He keeps saying, "I'm so thirsty," over and over.
So in the audiobook, narrator Vikas Adam does a good job, except in two areas where I have quibbles. The first of which regards R.L. Stine's gimmicks of repetitiveness to emphasize the spooky. And in the case of vampire breath, it is mostly done with the words, "so thirsty." Vikas kind of moans these words. Like, I get he's going for, like, a creaky, spooky effect, but they come off vaguely pornographic. Like, I am an adult with an adult brain, filled with 25 years of reading and writing erotica. So, yeah, take that as you will.
Yeah, I could see that. It is, and I don't read a lot of younger kid lit these days, but it does repeat the, "I'm thirsty, so thirsty," like, over and over. And I get that, like, for some younger readers, repetition is kind of part of it. And I could see why it would work. And you can't say, "I'm hungry and want to rip out your entrails and drink your blood and eat your heart," or whatever, for children that age. So I get that, like, "I'm thirsty" is like the threat, right? But like, it is a lot, and it does happen a lot in like one page.
Yeah. So you actually read the physical book, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I got it on Kindle, but yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You read the text. So yes. Was that repetitiveness then kind of grating on you as well?
It was a little, because it was just so repetitive. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where I'm like, I get it, dude. You're thirsty. Like, go get a beer out of the fridge. I'm sure the parents have one. Calm down. I don't even drink, but like, you know, come on, get some Kool-Aid or something. I'm sure Freddie has like a whole tub of Kool-Aid mix. He can mix you up some like real quick. So
exactly.
I mean, I know that's not what he's thirsty for, but still at some point you're like, drink some lemonade.
Get some Tang.
Yeah. Come on.
So the kids run, but the door to the basement closes on them and Count Nightwing catches up, grabbing Kara. And he's about to put her on the back of a milk carton when he realizes he does not have his fangs.
Uh-oh, that's a big problem if you're a vampire.
It is. Count Nightwing demands his vampire breath and forces the kids to go back and look for it. When they find it, Count Nightwing removes the stopper and more green mist comes out. This time, when the mist clears, they are no longer in an underground vault, but a large room in a castle surrounded by dozens of coffins. And it is the year 1880. So, yep, the book just pulled a TARDIS on us and went back in time.
Huh.
Now, Freddie and Kara live in Ohio. There are no castles in Ohio. I Googled. So, I don't know if vampire breath can distort the rules of space and time as well.
I'm assuming it must because, yeah, they end up in this castle from the past. So,
did the book jar you as much as it did me when it went from urban horror kidlit to time traveling adventure in the space of a sentence?
Yeah, I definitely didn't expect them to time travel. Like, what the hell is in vampire breath anyway? Which actually is a big question I'm going to have. But it was a little jarring. And also, it's one of those things where, like, I was already trying to figure out what the heck vampire breath was. And then all of a sudden, they're in the past. And I was like, whoa, there's a lot happening here.
Yeah, there's a lot happening, like, in a very small amount of time.
So we learn that vampire breath is the source of a vampire's power. It allows vampires to travel through time, become invisible and reappear. It gives them energy. It keeps their skin smooth and clear. It helps them sleep. It keeps their bones from drying into powder. And it freshens their breath like a good stick of gum. It also restores the vampire's memory, which helps Count Nightwing remember where his fangs are. So what do you think of vampire breath as a power source?
I think vampire breath is a very unique addition to vampire lore. Like, I can't recall another source of power of its likeness in any other media. We usually get shiny things like gemstones, rings, amulets, some sort of signifier of wealth. Vampire breath is a grotesque mist bottled up. Also, it's crazy that halfway through this book, it kind of gets sci-fi on us with the wibbly wobbly timey wimey plot twist. So the fact that vampire breath can like change genres is probably like the greatest power of all.
Yeah, it's so weird because like I kept trying to figure out what the heck vampire breath was. And like, as we go into it, like it can't just be a vampire's breath that they breathe out. Right. Because then they could just refill bottles anytime they wanted. So I'm like, well, what is it then? Where does it come from? What is the source of this vampire breath? How does it work? We don't get any answers, I don't think.
And yeah, the mystery of the vampire breath is going to, unfortunately, just be one of those
things that really get a good explanation.
Remains a mystery. Is this what they call a MacGuffin?
Maybe.
The coffins around the kids begin opening, revealing many other vampires. They all turn into bats and fly off for the night. Count Nightwing approaches the kids and reveals he doesn't know how to send them home, except by turning them into vampires and letting them wait it out. Count Nightwing leaves in search of his bottle of vampire breath. Kara believes that they need to find the vampire breath before the count. The kids decide to make a break for it, exploring the castle for an exit. They find a window and crawl onto a ledge with the hope of escaping. Unfortunately, the window ledge is overlooking a sharp drop as the castle is built on a cliff. Freddy falls, but he is saved by a bat. Once inside, the bat turns back into Count Nightwing. That was sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty lucky.
The vampire warns the kids to not try to escape again. And if there is a next time, the Count vows not to save them. He then demands that the kids come help him find the vampire breath.
Yeah, Count Nightwing has no idea how kids work at all. He's like, okay, no, don't try to escape again.
Gee willikers, mister, we sure won't.
Yeah, not a great plan. But, you know, hey, he's doing his best. Look, he just woke up in a strange place in Ohio. Now he's suddenly back at his castle. Doesn't really know what's going on. Now he's got these two random kids with him. Like, you know, it's an adventure.
See, that's the vampire show I want to see. It's like the accidental father figure, the vampire, who have like these two children that he just has to now take care of, and they're mortal, and crazy hijinks ensues.
Be like my vampire dad, and it'd be like a super 80s sitcom.
Oh, it have, yeah. It would have like the same tune to My Two Dads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We're old.
I still think that they need to remake that as two gay dads.
That would be pretty great, actually.
Yeah, but that's for another podcast. Anyway. Mm-hmm.
So the kids and Count Nightwing split up so they can better search for vampire breath. And the kids discover another room filled with open coffins. And Freddy and Kara find only one coffin with the lid closed. And they open it and they find a bottle of vampire breath inside. And they're about to unstop the bottle when they're approached by a young girl who introduces herself as Gwendolyn. She says that the Count forces her to be a maid in the castle. And then Gwendolyn offers to help Kara and Freddy, and she leads the kids down this long tunnel and into the cellar because she's going to help them get out. But then she stops suddenly, and we learn she's actually a vampire, and she is also thirsty. So Kara suggests that Freddy use the vampire breath to transport them into the future, and Freddy opens the bottle. And they wait, and the bottle's empty, so it doesn't transport them anywhere. And then Count Nightwing approaches, and he begins hissing at Gwendolyn, who hisses back. And they have a little fight, and Freddy and Kara are able to escape.
Children vampires are interesting and not often written about. I have to admit that I was totally duped by Gwendolyn until she started leading them away from their task, which I didn't get. Like, they should have just opened the bottle then and there. Like, sucks to be you. I mean, obviously, they would have found it empty, but still.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked her as a character. I kind of wish they did more with her other than just, like, a hissing match with Count Nightwing.
Yeah. But, like, I think child vampires are creepy as fuck. Like, no thanks. Stay away from me. I'm holding up my fingers as a cross. You can't see that on a podcast, though, so that's not an effective gesture. I do like the twist where she pretends to be like a human maid and then is like, bam, vampire. I thought that was good. But I have questions about Gwendolyn, so let's put a little pin in that.
Okay.
So still in the cellar, the kids find the shelf and it's filled with vampire breath bottles. And they're like, woo, okay, one of these has got to have some stuff in it, right? Yay, we found it. But Count Nightwing finds the kids and he tells them that there's only one full bottle of vampire breath left in the entire castle. So the castle is full of empties and there's only one good one, but he doesn't remember where he put it. And so all three of them begin frantically searching for it.
Freddy says that he found the bottle. Freddy and Kara begin tossing the bottle back and forth, playing keep away from the Count. When Count Nightwing retrieves the bottle, he opens it, only to discover that it too is empty. Freddy realizes that he had grabbed the wrong bottle. Freddy grabs another bottle that he thinks is full, and he tosses it to Kara. The Count tries to grab the bottle, but it falls to the floor. Putrid gas pours out. Before long, the kids find themselves back in Freddy's basement. So, I'm unsure about reading the book itself. But in the audiobook, this whole game of keep away was highly confusing. Either way, it was a means for more timey-wimey bullshit and the kids to get back in the basement. So I understand why it was necessary, but I was having like a I was like playing mental ping pong with the narrative.
Yeah, I don't remember it being super clear in the book either, but it's just kind of throwing the bottle around and eventually it breaks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it wasn't super like, I have a very good visual image of who's got the bottle. You know what I mean?
Right.
So Count Nightwing is frightened and distraught. and unhappy to find that he's been transported forward in time with them, because now he's no longer in his castle, but back at this modern basement. And he begins to panic because he realizes that without his fangs, he won't be able to drink blood. And if he's not able to drink blood, he'll perish. So that's kind of distressing. I mean, I would be distressed too. And then Freddy's parents come in the basement, and they oddly don't seem disturbed by the fact that this dude is there or that he's a vampire.
Yeah, so Freddy and Count Nightwing are like in the middle of like wrestling. And all of a sudden, when the parents do come down in the basement, Count Nightwing instantly recognizes Freddy's mom, Cynthia. And he's like, Cynthia? And she, in turn, addresses the Count as Daddy. She introduces Count Nightwing to Freddy. And apparently, the Count had been napping for so long that he hadn't met his own grandson. Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Whoa.
The Count and Freddy are equally confused. The Count then complains that his fangs are gone. But Mrs. Martinez says that his fangs are in a glass in the basement bathroom where he left them.
Hmm.
So this is where, even as a kid, I would have been like, the fuck? Because Freddy mentions that the basement bathroom is never used, yet the basement has all of the trappings of a cool suburban playroom, complete with pool table and air hockey. Why wouldn't you use the bathroom there? It would have made better sense if it was clarified that either Freddy's parents glamored the basement to seem undesirable, or if it was truly out of order. Freddy says that they use the bathroom, quote, across the basement. Like, what the hell does that mean? Two bathrooms in a basement? I just don't understand.
Yeah, so like, I'm guessing it's kind of like a finished basement or a daylight basement. And I could see there being two bathrooms if there's like also some bedrooms down there or something. Mm. So like if it's like a big underground, you know, basement space that has multiple rooms.
Yeah.
But man, I grew up a poor kid in a rich town, and I remember going to my friends' houses and coming home and telling my mom that they lived in mansions, because they weren't mansions. They were just large single family homes that had like formal living rooms and 4 to 5 bedrooms and just like maybe a finished basement or like, you know, a finished rec room or something. That just to me was so extravagant. So the idea of having two bathrooms on your lower floor and probably 2 or 3 upstairs is just like, whoa, their house is very nice. Like the Martinez are not hurting. And, you know, if they're related to a vampire who might have generational wealth, I guess that actually makes a lot of sense.
And it isn't ever explained where that castle is, you know, but we do have like this tunnel. So is the castle somewhere else? Now, Freddy's house is not on a cliff. I feel like that would be mentioned. Like, I feel like if this was on the exact spot where Freddy's house would eventually be, that would have been written.
Yes. Yeah.
So I feel like the tunnel in the basement was something that Freddy's parents maybe customized.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. To keep Count Nightwing safe. In which case, like, yeah, a finished basement.
Yeah, a really nice custom house.
With, like, a whole suite and stuff. Especially if they're in anticipation for Count Nightwing waking up one day and be like, hey, you don't have to sleep in a coffin anymore. Look, we have this awesome bed. And it's in a basement. So, you know, you're fine.
My appeal to vampires is that if your mythology does not actually confine you to sleeping in a coffin, get a nice mattress. Like, yeah. Come on. Mattress technology has really improved.
It like really has.
Get a good bed. Like, you don't need to put yourself through that. Don't sleep in a box.
And if you're sensitive to sunlight, which I think the vampire breath helps, I don't even fucking know. Just aluminum foil your windows, man.
Blackout curtains.
Blackout curtains, aluminum foil.
They have blackout blinds. You can double up on those two things. You're fine. Just make sure you lock your bedroom door if you have a housekeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So Count Nightwing retrieves his dentures and places them in his mouth. And Freddy is, of course, shocked by all this news because he just found a vampire in his basement. And now his mom is calling the vampire dad. That's a little weird. And so then Freddy's like, wait, does that mean I'm a vampire? And his mother's like, of course you are. Of course you are. But your fangs won't grow in for another 100 years.
Oh, wow.
And the adults are like, hey, you know, since dad's back, let's go get a drink. So they like are going to head up to their fancy kitchen where they probably have a wet bar and a nice kitchen island. You know, I really need more counter space, you guys. I don't have any. I miss it. I miss counter space. But anyway, yeah, they're going to head up there and have a drink. And so they all turn into bats and fly away. And apparently they don't care that Kara is right there either. Like, this isn't some secret they need to keep from her.
So if I were Kara, I'd have been like, oh my God, I will see you. Goodbye.
I mean, like, this is obviously some family secret deal. And obviously she's really close to the family. She's one of those friends who's probably over all the time.
Yeah.
But still, it feels like maybe they could have told her to go home before they reveal all this stuff to Freddie. But anyway, I'm not, you know, he's not my kid. It's not my problem.
Not my circus, not my monkey.
Right, right.
So Freddie decides to explore the basement bathroom further to see if there's anything else weird inside of it. He finds a bottle labeled werewolf sweat.
Ooh.
Freddie accidentally opens the bottle and a strange liquid pours out onto Kara. Freddie is worried about what the substance will do. And through the mist, suddenly he hears Kara begin to growl.
So maybe they were okay revealing the secret because they know that Kara is also a werewolf.
Well, this book would not be a Goosebumps book if it did not have the 11th hour plot twist and out of left field cliffhanger that leads to absolutely nowhere.
Right, because there's like no sequel or anything, right?
No. No, so, not at all. I totally thought there was. I thought Count Nightwing appears in later Goosebumps series. He does appear or is like mentioned or something, like kind of like an Easter egg style in another book or something. But no, he's never the focus again. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I know that there are werewolf books. Does it pick up with Kara? No, no, not at all. And I'm just like, all right. And I think Kara is only now a werewolf because of the werewolf breath. That's what I assumed. I assumed the werewolf breath made her into a...
Oh, so you don't think she was like already a werewolf and that was like her grandma's bottle or something?
No, because they're at Freddy's house. Why would it be her grandma's bottle?
I don't know. I'm just trying.
You think werewolf breath like triggered her turning into a werewolf outside of the full moon?
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's werewolf sweat. So it's not breath. So they have a different system.
Yeah, werewolf sweat.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Right, because I mean, it does say that like it like splashes on her or gets on her or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and she's like, hey. And then all of a sudden she like begins to growl or howl or something.
Yeah, you're probably right. She probably got turned into a werewolf. That's going to be like...
That's got to be shitty.
Well, it's going to be some awkward high school years. Like, your best friend is a werewolf. You're a vampire, but you don't even have fangs.
I know. Like, that's taking Teen Wolf to, like, a whole new level.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. I just thought about Teen Wolf. I haven't watched that show. I watched, like, the first season, and then I was like, can't do this anymore. But it was fun.
Oh, wow. You're talking about a show? I'm talking about the movie with Michael J. Fox.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the show with, you know, Styles and...
Styles?
Derek and... Yeah, like his, anyway, never mind. Let's not even get into that. Because
yeah, this is a vampire podcast, not a werewolf podcast.
Yeah, we don't even need to go there. So this is a Goosebumps book. At what age do you think you would have read it? And would you recommend it to younger readers?
This book would have probably hit best for me from age 8 through age 10. I'd have been over it and moving on to scarier books by the time I was 11 and forget it by 12. Mm-hmm. Obviously, books are intensely personal things, and I can't say whether your child, meaning like the listeners, like whether
I don't have kids,
right, will be scared or enjoy it. But if your kid leans on the spoopy side of the spectrum of interests, I would suggest to start introducing them to Goosebumps. They're fun chapter books for the kid who does not like the assigned reading material in school. And the chapters are quick enough to get through for a kid who is struggling and doesn't want to feel overwhelmed. Also, since each chapter ends on a cliffhanger, it remains interesting enough to hold a kid's attention. And even though I am an avid collector of kid lit, this one did not grab me enough for me to rush out and buy it. I only own one Goosebumps book, though, and that isn't a comment on Vampire Breath specifically, more like Goosebumps as a whole for me, because I didn't really get into them when I was a kid. I was more of a Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark
kid. Yeah. So what Goosebumps book do you have?
I have The Phantom of the Auditorium.
Okay, cool.
Because I'm a Phantom girl, and...
I was a Les Mis girl, so I get it, but I was on the other side.
Yeah.
Goosebumps came out a little late for me. I mean, this is 1996, so I was already mad at the Vampire Chronicles from Memnock the Devil.
Exactly.
So, like, at that point, I was already kind of beyond Goosebumps. Although, my younger brother was kind of the right age for these, and I did buy them for him as gifts sometimes. Like, I would buy them at, like, Walden Books, or, like, we would go to the bookstore, and I would give them to him, like, for Christmas and stuff. I would buy him a couple Goosebumps. So I did occasionally read them just because they were in the house, and, you know, he had them, and so I would, like, pick one up and read it in, like, an hour, you know. They're short, quick little reads. I don't think I ever read this one. And actually, the only R.L. Stine book I ever read in middle school, it was a more young adult horror book, because that before he did Goosebumps, he did like the young adult horror book.
Is that Fear Street? Is that him?
I think that's him, but this was before Fear. Well, it wasn't maybe before Fear Street, but it wasn't part of the Fear Street series.
Okay.
It was called Beach House, and it was like a slasher murder mystery, like at a beach house on the ocean with a bunch of teenagers like staying there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it at a book fair at school, and I really liked it. And I was probably about 11 or 12 when I read that. And at that point, I was reading Stephen King and Anne Rice and Michael Crichton. But, like, I still would read some of that stuff.
Yeah, same.
So I think Goosebumps, if they had come out when I was a little younger, like more 7 or 8, I probably would have been all over them. It just missed me because of the age. But I definitely think, like, yeah, if I had a young kid who was like 6, 7, 8, I don't know, 6 might be a little young. Again, I don't have children, so I'm not exactly sure where those levels, like where the lines are. But I would definitely give it to like a 7 or 8 year old kid and be like, hey, this could be a fun read for you. Like, it's not super scary. It's got some like horror elements and some monsters, but it's definitely not going to like give you nightmares or make you, you know, hopefully, I mean, maybe for some kids. But yeah, I think it's a safe read for like a young kid. I think they'd enjoy it. I think by the time you get to middle school, some kids might be at that level. Some kids might have moved on. It's just going to depend on the kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, if I had latched on to Goosebumps, I'm trying to think of when they initially started coming out. And I'm pretty sure that they started coming out when I was still in grade school.
They might have. I just maybe didn't know about them.
Yeah. 1992. So I would have been, okay. I absolutely would have been. Oh yeah. The month I turned 10 is when Welcome to Dead House. And Stay Out of the Basement were both released.
Nice.
So, and I remember like the first 4, because I remember them appearing in our school library, but they were so popular that they were instantly always checked out. And I just wasn't willing to fight kids for it, you know?
Right.
Like I already had to do that with Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So I just ended up my parents just ended up buying them for me. I did read some Goosebumps in 6th or 7th grade, the earlier ones. And then I got to like the Phantom of the Auditorium and I was like, hell yeah, you know, and that one I just stumbled on at the public library. And I, you know, loved it because it had something to do with Phantom of the Opera kind of.
Right.
And then like you with the beach house, I did The Dead Girlfriend, something like that.
Okay.
And that one I really liked. But yeah, it was like a teen slasher one.
I might have read a couple more that I just checked out at the library and didn't have. I know like I had bought Beach House. So like, I remember that one more because it was on my bookshelf for a long time. I might've picked up a couple in the school library. Like I was always looking for stuff to read because I was a pretty quick reader and my teachers wouldn't let me read certain things for reading points. So like I had to find other books because like.
Lame.
Yeah.
Lame.
Yeah. I remember one time, like I tried to. I was reading The Witching Hour, which I'm not a big fan of that series, but I was reading it and I was trying to get like reading credit for it. But my teacher would do this thing where she would go through the book and like to prove that you read it, she would like say, okay, who's this character? And that book had so many freaking characters and they all had like the same last name. And so she'd be like, who's this person? And I'd be like, I don't know. There's like this one
Mayfair?
Scene.
Who's this yeah. Mayfair? Who's
and I'd
this
be like, Mayfair? I don't know who Elvis Mayfair is. He's in one scene for like half a second and then vanishes forever. Like, who knows? So like, I think she just at that point was like, you need to read other stuff, and gave me Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I was like, okay, I can do this. So, but I was always looking for books. So I'm sure I read a couple. I do want to come back to that pin about Gwendolyn.
Yeah.
This is where I have the question, right? Like, she's a child vampire in 1880, but then we learn that Freddy's not going to get his fangs for 100 years. So presumably he has aged normally up until this point, because he has not noticed any deviation from his peers in that way.
Right.
Oh. So does that mean? So like, how is there a child vampire? Because she shouldn't have her fangs yet, right?
Right. That is strange.
Yeah. So I was just thinking about that the other day. It was one of those, like, I was, you know, you're at the fridge moments and you're like, wait a minute. How was there a child vampire in this? That's not how vampires work. We learned that at the end. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. I thought that was kind of a weird.
No, that is super weird, because obviously these are vampires who can procreate.
Right. The, like, vampires who are born.
Yeah. Vampires who are born. But maybe there's a difference.
Yeah, maybe you can have vampires who are turned, although then turning a child seems like a bad idea, which we all know why that's not a good plan. But yeah, maybe that's what happened. That would explain it.
Yeah, and he probably just feels responsible. He's like, probably like want to, you know, he's just like, because that's like obviously his coven of vampires.
Yes.
Because there's like literally dozens and dozens of vampires that live in his castle. So yeah, maybe Gwendolyn got turned. At least that's what I have to assume to sleep at night. Otherwise, yeah, it'll keep me up with like inconsistencies. No,
well,
because
that makes sense.
We'll eventually tackle the Little Vampire series by Angela Sommer Bodenberg. And there are questions about the vampires that I know do not get answered and I do not understand. Because the children were actually turned by their mother.
Oh,
yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, like their whole family are vampires. So the mother turned the father and then turned their three kids. But they're turned first. So I don't know. Yeah, it's odd.
Yeah, just a little odd thing that I noticed. And I was like, wait,
yeah.
What?
No, that's okay. Yeah, no, that's an inconsistency. I mean, you know, these are not deeply philosophical.
No, I mean, it comes back to like, what the heck is vampire breath? Because obviously it's not breath coming out of a vampire. So is it something like a witch has to concoct? Like, where does it come from originally?
Right. I guess that's the joy of being able to write kids' books back then. Is that you don't need an explanation. Why do you need an explanation? I would hope that children are thought of as a little bit more clever and a little bit more thought-provoking than they did in the early 1990s. So,
yeah, totally.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. It's just one of those things where it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, no. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because none of these characters ever appear anywhere ever again. So it's just for like a really good little thrill.
All right. Well, do you have anything else to say about vampire breath?
No, other than if we have parents or people with nieces, nephews, friends with children, and they are showing signs of baby batdom, that this might be a really nice present for them.
Yeah, it's a cute book. It was fun to read. Like, I did enjoy reading it.
Yeah.
It's a fun little adventure. It's not very long. Obviously, we're adults, so for a kid would be a little bit longer. But like, yeah, it's just a fun little story and it's cute. And the ending is fun. Like, it's,
yeah.
Oh, I'm a vampire and now my friend's going to be a werewolf. Like, that could be fun.
Yeah.
You definitely do stuff with that.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you can prompt the child in question to like create their own adventures or something.
Yeah. Well, this was fun. Like I said, I don't read a lot of kid lit these days. So it is fun. Like every once in a while, I pick up a middle grade book or something. And I'm like, this is really fun. I should read more of this. And then I don't. So
yeah,
I'm glad we did this. And we talked about this book.
Yeah. And we will be discussing vampire literature for all age range.
Yeah. Someone was asking me to describe this podcast. And I was like, basically, if it's about vampires, we will probably talk about it at some point. I don't know when, but we'll probably get around to it, or at least that's the goal. So, but we're not there yet. So before we completely sign off, we have a question of the episode. And this episode's question is, what was the first vampire book that you ever read? And feel free to answer us on social media. We'll have those links in the show notes. Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion of Vampire Breath.
This is Tori and Chell wishing you a fangtabulous evening with vampire wishes and batty nightmares.
Your hostesses through the everlasting darkness have been Tori and Chell, and this podcast was edited by Lazy End Productions.
Our music is mixed by Vic Raw, the Never Living, and includes Dark Halloween Night by Chase Allen Willis and Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach and performed by Kevin MacLeod.
Find us at anchor.com/vampiresruinedmylife or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I think you're going to have to like write R.L. Stein and ask him.
And I'll be like, dear R.L. Stein, I'm almost 40 years old and I read your book, Vampire Breath.
But one question, which has haunted me since childhood, like because he doesn't need to know that you didn't read this as a kid.
I just read it last month and I was wondering.
I read it for my podcast.